This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allows you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/AC and use the promo code AC. That's awaytravel.com/AC, promo code AC. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. 168. That's the number of hours that you have in a week. And I know it doesn't often feel like it, but we all have the exact same number. So why does it seem like some people are able to make time in their life to get around to the things that matter while others seem to be scrambling? And often, I don't know if you're like me, but often you look back and you think, now what exactly did I do today? Well, today's guest is Jake Knapp. He's written a book called Make Time, and he's going to talk to us about how to build some strategy into our days so that we're making time for the things that matter each and every day. Before we jump into the interview, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Away. Away makes affordable, high-quality suitcases that charge your phone. And by cutting out the middleman, Away is able to offer the perfect luggage made with high-quality materials at a much lower price. There's a variety of options. It comes in a variety of colors and four sizes. There's a carry-on. There's a bigger carry-on if you're like me and you travel with a little bit more. There's a medium and there's a large. And it comes in a variety of colors that can match whatever style is important to you. They've designed the perfect suitcase. I know this. I use my Away suitcase when I travel. I'm on the road constantly, and I use my Away Travel suitcase wherever I go. It's great. I can charge my phone on the go. The four 360-degree spinner wheels don't get stuck. They don't break. I glide through airports. Sometimes I run through airports, if you know what I'm talking about. And even overpackers can fit everything they need. I tend to stuff my suitcase full, and I've never had a problem. So Away has a special offer just for listeners of the Axonal Creative. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/AC and use promo code AC at checkout. Plus, you get free shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states. That's awaytravel.com/AC and use promo code AC. And we thank Away for sponsoring this episode of the Axonal Creative Podcast. Well, it's a great joy to have on the show today, Jake Knapp. Jake is the co-author of a new book called Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day. Jake, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Hey, Todd, thank you so much for having me here on the podcast.
So I have to say, well, thanks for making time. I have to use that line.
Yeah, you're contractually obligated to say
it. That's right. Absolutely. That was the one thing that your publicist said, like, you have to make that joke at the very beginning. That's the one thing you have to do. So, first of all, I love this book. I did. I just want to say that out of the gate. And the reason I loved it is because it's not prescriptive in the way that some books are prescriptive, you know, where they say, do this, and then do this, and then do this. Instead, you sort of created a smorgasbord of tactics and let people kind of pick and choose the tactics that they think might work best for them and to experiment. And I love that nature of this book. But this is not, and you even say this early in the book, this is not a book about productivity. It's a book about making more time. What does that mean? Making more time? You're a wizard? Like, what do you mean? Making more time? What does that mean?
That's a great question, because it's kind of a bold, brassy statement to say that we have an idea about how you can make time. And of course you can't like add hours onto the day. It would be great if we could give you a recipe for doing that. But our premise in the book is that there are a lot of hours in the day. There are a lot of moments that we miss because we're distracted, because our attention's fragmented, or because we're tired. There are hours basically that we can reclaim if we change some things around. And so the whole book is filled with tactics, as you said, for finding those moments and then kind of reclaiming that time back so that you can put it to a purpose that's, you know, in line with your own priorities, not everybody else's.
And you know, it's not things, and I was sort of, I mean, I'll just be really, I mean, I read a lot of books, as you can imagine, and, you know, picking up a book like this, my first thought is they're going to tell me, stop watching Netflix, you know, like, stop it, you know, like these things like that. And it wasn't, I was pleasantly surprised. Like, these are really good tactics and very insightful tactics. There are kind of four steps that you and your co-author point out in the book to help us make time, and it's highlight, laser, reflect, and energize. So I'd love to just talk through those four steps or those four kind of phases of making time, and maybe just highlight a couple of things in those phases that you think might be especially relevant. So let's start with highlight. What do you mean by highlight?
Yeah, let's do this. And let's just, you know what, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love listening to people talk about their books, because a lot of times you can get the gist of the book right from the podcast. You might not even have to read it. So we'll try to just give the game away right now and explain what this is all about. Great. So basically, the idea with the highlight is that I feel like we are, me myself personally, this happens all the time, I'm just like under the thumb of my email inbox and my to-do list. You know, if I don't take corrective action, then those things will rule my day. And so the idea with the highlight is to start off each day by ignoring your inbox, ignoring your to-do list even, and saying, look, if I imagine that this day was over and I was looking back on it, what do I want to say was the highlight of my day? What do I want to say was like the thing that, you know, gave me the most joy or satisfaction? And then saying, okay, I'm going to actually like commit to that thing. I'm going to write it down and I'm going to go all in on that thing. It doesn't mean it's the only thing I'll do all day today. It doesn't mean I won't check my email. It doesn't mean I won't do any of my other to-dos. But it means that for like ideally like 60 to 90 minutes, I'm going to focus on that thing. And during that time, I'm going to just ignore everything else. I won't be on my phone. I won't be, you know, bouncing back and forth between different tabs in my browser. I won't be, if I'm, you know, with somebody having a meal, maybe that's my highlight. I won't be divided with my attention from something else. I'm just going to be all in on that thing. I'm going to give it my peak energy. And that is the core. If you don't pay any more attention to what I have to say, if you just try doing that each day, I find that so powerful and allows me to do things that I really care about, reclaim time back because now I'm on the offensive, and just enjoy life more.
I think people hearing that's great advice. And I think people hearing that advice, Jake, might immediately out of guilt choose something that they really don't want to be the highlight of their day, but they feel like should be the highlight of their day, right? Like that TPS report is going to be the highlight of my day today. Like,
totally.
So right. What advice do you have to people who might be more prone to kind of picking something that isn't really the thing that they would look back on and say, I'm so glad that was the highlight of my day?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for starters, I think it's good to acknowledge that those things, the TPS reports of life, like sometimes they are the highlight of the day. And the highlight can be the thing that you're like, oh my God, like I have to get this thing done. Yeah. You know, like it's due tomorrow, or like I have a big presentation at the end of the week, or like whatever. Like sometimes you have to do that thing. And the you know that at the end of the day, what's going to be the most satisfying is going to be to say, the TPS report is, you know, it's, I put it to bed. Nothing is done. Like it's, that can be a huge relief to get that task done. So, hey, if it's a big project, even if it's not exciting and fun, like sometimes this is something I know your previous guest was, or one of your previous guests was David Allen. And something that I learned from his book that I just love is this idea of unlocking, he calls it psychic energy, which I think is like, it's very David Allen. I mean, the guy is like a shaman. But this idea that when you get rid of something, when you do something gnarly, that you just like unleash energy, you know, and it might be creative energy. For me, that's often how I feel like it's like creative energy comes from getting those things done. So anyway, I'm rambling a bit, but if you get that thing done, that's fine. Like, and maybe the first few times you set a highlight, it's just going to be the most important work project, and that's fine. But you'll start to build this muscle memory of like, if I choose one biggish thing, not just a task on the to-do list, but one like 60 to 90 minute thing, and I start to train myself to be focused, everything else shut off during that period of time, and I focus on it, then you're building like a skill that you can start to apply to other things. You can point that laser at, you know, at an activity with your kids, or you can point it at maybe a creative pursuit, you know, or a hobby of some kind. Like once that laser is all sort of dusted off and you've practiced using it, it's a great tool to have.
So let's talk about laser. That's the second phase.
See how I did that little segue.
That was so smooth. You've done this a couple of times, haven't you? That was so great.
I've never done it that way. I think that's a good one. Okay, so go ahead.
You need to highlight your laser to energize and reflect. Okay, we're done. Great.
Yeah.
So tell me about laser, this next phase. What does this mean?
Yeah, laser. Okay, so the idea with laser is like it's being 100% focused on one thing. And there's all kinds of ways people talk about this. So I read a book a while ago called Flow by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. I think is how you pronounce his name. I'm sure
that's right. Correct. That's what I'm talking. Csikszentmihalyi. Yeah.
So great book, great concept, like really this powerful concept of being like, you know, sort of all in the flow where time just seems to kind of like disconnect and you're just in the task, right? And there's, Deep Work by Cal Newport, right? Also kind of talking about this similar idea, this idea of like being like really your head is way into some task. I worked for many years in technology. I worked at Google for a decade, before that Microsoft for a number of years. And the last few years I was working on this process I created called a design sprint, where I'd get a team of people either at Google or then at startups, and I would control their schedule for a week, and I would basically help them do whatever was their most important project. And what I kind of saw was that if you got people to put away their laptops, put away their phones, and just focus on one thing, like if you remove distractions, then all of a sudden people could get into this deep state of focus. Call it flow, call it deep work, whatever you want. We just call it laser mode. So it's like you remove the obstacles and the laser can shine bright. And so that's what laser mode is all about. It's about figuring out what do you want to focus on. That's your highlight. You're, you know, choosing your target. And then you're saying, okay, let's get distractions out of the way. And if I know what I want to focus on, then that attention, that flow, it's just going to appear.
Mm. And one of the, we tend to think, oh, because of technology, this is a unique problem we're experiencing right now. But if you look back to the mid-1990s, I mean, there were lots of books written. Well, I think Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death was written in what, the 80s or 90s, right? And it was a book about how all of these distractions of modern life are pulling us away from the things that matter and are most important. I mean, this is a human condition thing. This is not a, oh, woe is us for living in 2019 thing.
Absolutely. And I just read a quote by Laura Ingalls Wilder, one of my favorite authors. She wrote the Little House on the Prairie books. And obviously, she grew up in a different time. She grew up, she's like a pioneer. There's this quote from her as an adult, but still she lives on a farm and kind of the, you know, rural middle of nowhere. And she's talking about life is becoming so fast paced. Nobody has time for anything anymore. It's just busyness all the time. And this is in like, you know, maybe the 1930s or 40s and like a farm in the middle of Nebraska or something. Like it's just sort of amazing. This is a nonstop, I think, human condition thing. Yeah. And we have a bit of an advantage now, though, in a way. Like our technology is the problem, but it can also be the solution. Like I think of my phone as like a, it's kind of like a jar full of like honey or roadkill or whatever you want. If you imagine like wasps just being attracted to that thing, all of the distractions are in that thing. And if you take control of that one thing, it's so localized. There's so many distractions coming out of the phone that if you get control of that thing, if you throw the jar in the river for a while, like the wasps are going to leave you alone. And we have that power now in a way that if we take control of it, it's pretty amazing how quickly you can shut things off, as hard as it can be.
Yeah. I love, by the way, that you just use honey and roadkill as your two examples. So like, what? Okay. It made sense once you explained it. Like, I can't wait to see where this goes. That was awesome. I love that. I think that's so true. And it's so helpful. Let's talk about energize. You know, this is something we love to pay homage to. People talk about it all the time. But, you know, we are in, and you've probably seen as much as I have, the sort of cult of you must get up at 4:30 a.m. to succeed. And you must, you know, like have your workout and all of your study in by 5:30 or else you're a complete loser. And, yeah, you know, I mean, there's sort of all these people now who are telling you how to command your day by taking, and listen, for some people, absolutely. You know, if that's your thing, great. If it works for you, fantastic. But I think that the problem is that we have to recognize that different people are energized in different ways. So when you say energize, I would love to hear what you mean when you're talking about energizing as part of this process.
Yeah. So, you know, you're right. Like the modern kind of I feel like it's stressful in the modern world, the way we ask ourselves to be so perfect at everything. Mm-hmm. We ask ourselves to do so much. And when we talk about health, we're often comparing ourselves to, you know, people who we see on Instagram or who we see like in the checkout stand, you know, people with like 12 pack abs and, you know, just like, it's just like a crazy world out there of expectations. And there's a lot of advice about like ways to just like micro, you know, people are micro dosing things and like just making these crazy like improvements, you know, like cold therapies and stuff. And I mean, it might all be great, but like, honestly, if we just stop shooting ourselves in the foot a bit, like if you just do that, if you stop shooting yourself in the foot, a lot of times there's some simple ways to boost energy. And I don't think you can talk about attention and making time for the projects and the people that you care about. You can't really talk about that and ignore physical energy, because it's a part of it. It's a part of what makes it work. And you know, going back to the beginning when you said, like, what do you mean by making time? One of the ways that we lose time is when our energy is gone for a reason that's correctable. And that can happen on any given day. I might have a sugar crash or a caffeine crash, or I might have just not slept well the night before, or I might have eaten like, you know, too big of a lunch, or like, you can imagine all the little things that could steal my energy. Sure. It might be that I didn't get outside. I didn't get a little bit of exercise. There's these things that can steal our energy. And if those things steal your energy, you won't be able to make time for things that you care about. But at the same time, you know, I don't have this expectation that people need to be heroic. And that's one of the big things we talk about with all the tactics that we talk about for Energize. They're really small things, and they're all based on this idea that the world today is really out of whack with, you know, the way our bodies were evolved to perform. And if we make some small changes, again, that's sort of a big opportunity. Just like the phone is a big opportunity because you can shut it down, you can turn it off. The world being so out of whack is an opportunity, because some small corrections can make things a lot better. And if all you're looking for is just, I want to make energy today for this highlight, this thing that hopefully I'm pretty excited about, then it's also not this big abstract, like long-term health thing. We don't have to beat ourselves up. It's just like, God, I want to go on like a short run this morning, or take a walk, or like, you know, mind when I have my caffeine because I care about this project, or I care about this moment I'm going to have today. I get an instant reward for it. I don't have to wait in 30 years to improve my cardiovascular fitness, which is so abstract. I just get something like right now. And I think that's important too. But it's tough because I think we're bombarded with people giving us advice about health and all of these things. So we just thought we had to include it.
Well, I think was it John who used to play basketball for 3 hours in the morning, and you would come in. And you would come in completely exhausted, nursing a twisted ankle or whatever, and then you realize, wait a minute, I got just as much energy jogging around the neighborhood with my toddler son, you know, in a stroller or whatever it was. Actually, I had more energy after that than I did from playing basketball for 3 hours. Now, that was a really interesting principle, because I think we have to kill ourselves, right, in order to achieve the kind of energy that we get from exercise. But that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, the expectation of exercise being like a big performance, or of us all being athletes, you know, I think this is something that, like, not to like pick on Nike, but like Nike's sort of whole motto is like, everybody is an athlete. And in many ways, like, that approach has done a lot of good. I just think you see like echoes of that everywhere in our society, like everyone's an athlete. But it's sometimes taken to this degree where it's like, if my form of getting exercise doesn't make me feel like an athlete, you know, then like I'm not doing it properly. And I talk to so many people, maybe it's a reflection of, I live in San Francisco, and you know, the Bay Area is like a competitive area. Like, people are pretty
slightly
here, but yeah. But I think there's a bit of this everywhere that I've been, where I talk to folks and they're like, yeah, you know, like if I don't swim for like, you know, 2 hours or whatever, like it doesn't count. Like, everything is like, if I don't do this, like it feels like it doesn't count. And sometimes people won't exercise at all because they really, to them, it only counts if it's a big thing. And at least I have to say that was me. Like, that was definitely me. And I still can slip into feeling that. But that, you know, I finally realized a huge exercise. Sometimes it has a cost, actually. And it's not to discourage people from exercising. Maybe that's your highlight. Maybe that's the thing that you want to make time for. But you can't do everything. And I think a big part of the message of our book is like, we all just need to like do a bit less. We need to kind of like chill out and do less, but do it better.
Well, that performance mindset creeps into not just exercise, but a lot of other stuff, right? Like you said, you know, Silicon Valley is a very competitive place, and you look around and you see other people doing things, and you think, well, I should do that too. I mean, but I think that plays out in a lot of places. I remember a work colleague of mine once upon a time. She worked at Procter & Gamble, which is based here in Cincinnati, where I am, and she said, I think she said her father came to visit, and it was over lunchtime, and there were 15 people in her immediate work group that were going to go train for the marathon that was happening, you know, the Flying Pig Marathon in Cincinnati. And her father said, hold on. I think I've known 15 people in my entire life who have run a marathon, and you have 15 people like in your immediate vicinity here on this floor that are running in the marathon. Yeah. You know? And it was this sort of moment of realization that we can create this kind of culture of performance and high expectations. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with wanting to run a marathon or be in shape or any of that.
No, of course
but,
not.
But we always have to step back and say, okay, what am I doing because other people around me are doing it versus what am I doing because this is something unique I need to do in order to accomplish the goals that are before me.
Yeah. Every time I see, there's those stickers people have on the back of their car that say like, they have like the marathon distance numbers on them, you know, and like, I know why they put them on there. It's an accomplishment. Like, sure. They should feel good about it. It's cool. But when I see it, I'm like, God, I'm a loser. Like, I think about how far I run. I run like every day, like such a short distance. It's embarrassing. But I,
1.2.
Like, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, every time I look at the sticker, I'm like thinking like 1.2. And I'm like, oh. But, you know, that's me, right? Like, I'm sure doing that to myself when I see those stickers. And in a way, like, this, we can't change. We can complain about the culture. We can complain about all the things that are out there in the world today. Mm. But we should. But, like, we really have to just make changes ourselves.
Yeah.
Because that's what we control.
And that's right.
If you care about doing something that's novel, doing something that's true to yourself, you have to start with yourself. That's all you can do, I think.
Right. And that applies to your creativity. It applies to your productivity, the work you're putting out into the world. I mean, all of this expectation escalation applies to all of those areas, right? And so we have to be very careful. I want to move on and talk about the fourth and final step here, which is reflect. A lot of times we do things just because we do them and we don't stop to ask, now, was that really effective? So what are some ways we should think about this reflect phase?
The idea with reflecting is just to look back on the day and kind of having those ideas in mind of like, okay, like, did I do my highlight? You know, did I get to that? And when I got to it, like, was I able to focus? Like, what did my laser mode sort of look like today? And, you know, how was my energy level today? Just kind of thinking about those three things. And this is not like a big deal. Like, in the book, we do have this sort of idea of like a little, like kind of checklist or form you can fill out if you like. And we're coming out with some apps, like a little very simple app on Android and iOS that'll allow you to do this, you know, really quickly. But it's not meant to be like a big thing. It's just meant to help put us in the frame of mind of like, okay, today happened. Like, what were the factors that I could control or not control about my attention? If I didn't get to my highlight, often it's like because something else really important came along. And sometimes that helps me. A lot of this stuff is about modulating, like not beating myself up about stuff. So it's like I didn't do the thing that I thought was really important this morning, but this other thing came up, like maybe that was fine, you know. Like I'm a dad, and like I'm working on this writing project right now, and like if on a given day my highlight was to write, you know, whatever, like some number of words or do something, and I didn't do it, but like gosh, my son was sick, and like I got to read Harry Potter to him or something, like that was the highlight actually, and that's totally fine. It's totally fine to have that shove out of the way, the other thing. And so a lot of it is just sort of calibrating what worked, what didn't work, and making it feel like that day was just one experiment in a line of many experiments, a chance to learn, and not this big reflection on who I am or whether I'm capable of, you know, doing my creative projects or not or whatever. It's just like, yeah, that was just one day. Like, what happened? How do I do it maybe better next time?
Yeah. And sometimes, as you said, we discover in retrospect more about ourselves by looking at what our highlight actually was and then comparing that to what we planned our highlight to be. And then we realize, actually, that's not the thing that was the highlight of my day today.
Totally. Yeah. And that's kind of why I think, like, going back to that idea of the book not being about productivity, because productivity is a word I think that is best suited to, like, factories. Like, if your factory, like, churns out as many widgets as possible, it's being really productive. But I don't think that as humans, that's the best way to evaluate ourselves. And so I partly hope that in reflecting, people will say, yeah, gosh, I mean, the thing that gave me the most joy today, the thing that I was grateful for today, or whatever, like, was most satisfying, it was this thing. Like, so often for me, it is like reading to, you know, to my younger son, or taking a walk with my older son, or, you know, it's these things that, like, have nothing to do with work. But if I know in advance that, like, those could be the highlights, I'll structure my day to protect those things. Mm-hmm. And I'll make sure I bring peak energy to those things and don't spend my peak energy on my email inbox, you know, or something that doesn't really matter. That's not to say I'm not going to check my email, but I just have to make sure that those things that are lesser don't interrupt the things that really count.
And that's great. Well, we've been talking with Jake Knapp. He is the co-author of Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day. Jake, if people want to find out more about you and the book, where can they go?
A great place to find out about the book is maketimebook.com. And you can find sort of like excerpts from the book, and you can find the apps on there. And of course, you can find links to buy the book too.
Fantastic. Well, Jake, thanks so much for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Todd, for making the time to have me. Now, for the rest of my life, I'll never be able to say making time without coming across as a total salesman. But that's okay. That's okay. That's a sacrifice I'm willing to make. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, again, many thanks to Jake Knapp for being with us today. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and join the conversation at collective.accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.